Hello and welcome to the Zero to Finals podcast. My name is Tom, and in this episode, I'm going to be talking to you about coronary artery bypass grafts. And you can find written notes on this topic at zerotofinals.com/CABG or in the cardiothoracic surgery section of the Zero to Finals surgery book. So let's get straight into it. A coronary artery bypass graft, which can be shortened to CABG, pronounced cabbage, is a procedure that involves taking a graft blood vessel from somewhere else in the body, usually the saphenous vein, and bypassing a blockage in a coronary artery. Depending on the affected areas, this may involve 1, 2, 3, or even 4 bypass grafts. Let's start by talking about the coronary artery anatomy. The left coronary artery, or the LCA, becomes the circumflex and the left anterior descending, or LAD, arteries. The right coronary artery, or the RCA, curves around the right side of the heart and under the heart and supplies the right atrium, right ventricle, inferior aspect of the left ventricle, and the posterior septal area. The circumflex artery, which is a branch of the left coronary artery, curves around the top, left and back of the heart and supplies the left atrium and the posterior aspect of the left ventricle. The left anterior descending, or LAD, which is a branch of the left coronary artery, travels down the middle of the heart and supplies the anterior aspect of the left ventricle and the anterior aspect of the septum. Next, let's talk about atherosclerosis. Athero refers to soft or porridge-like, and sclerosis refers to hardening. Atherosclerosis is a combination of atheromas, which are fatty deposits in the artery walls, and sclerosis, which is the process of hardening or stiffening of the blood vessel walls. Atherosclerosis affects the medium and large arteries, and it's caused by chronic inflammation and activation of the immune system in the artery wall. Lipids are deposited in the artery wall, followed by the development of fibrous atheromatous plaques. These atheromatous plaques in the artery wall cause stiffening of the artery walls, leading to hypertension or raised blood pressure and strain on the heart whilst the blood pumps against this increased resistance. Stenosis of the artery walls, leading to reduced blood flow, for example in angina, and plaque rupture, which can result in a thrombus breaking away from the plaque and blocking a distal vessel, causing ischemia, for example in acute coronary syndrome. Let's talk about the risk factors for atherosclerosis. It's important to break these risk factors into modifiable and non-modifiable risk factors. We can't do anything about the non-modifiable ones, but we can do something about the modifiable ones. The non-modifiable risk factors are older age, family history, and being male. The modifiable risk factors are smoking, alcohol consumption, a poor diet that's high in sugar and trans fat and low in fruit, vegetables, and omega-3s, low exercise and a sedentary lifestyle, obesity, poor sleep, and increased stress. Let's talk about the associated medical comorbidities. Medical comorbidities increase the risk of atherosclerosis and should be carefully managed to minimize this risk. And these include diabetes, hypertension, chronic kidney disease, inflammatory conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis, and the use of atypical antipsychotic medications. A Tom tip for you. Think about risk factors when you're taking a history from somebody with suspected atherosclerosis-related disease, such as someone presenting with exertional chest pain that you think may be angina. Ask about their exercise, diet, past medical history, family history, occupation, smoking, alcohol intake, and medications. And this will help you perform well in exams and when presenting to seniors, because you'll be able to risk stratify patients as whether they're high risk or low risk of having an atherosclerosis-related condition. Let's talk about the conditions that are caused by atherosclerosis. And these are angina, myocardial infarction or heart attacks, transient ischemic attacks, strokes, peripheral arterial disease, and chronic mesenteric ischemia. A thumb tip for you, patients with one type of arterial disease are likely to have others. When a patient has symptoms of one type of arterial disease, for example, intermittent claudication, consider the risk of others, for example, coronary artery disease. Erectile dysfunction can often be the first indication of arterial disease, and this should prompt you to consider checking the lipid profile, blood pressure, and the Q risk score. The Q risk score is the percentage risk that a patient will have a stroke or a myocardial infarction in the next 10 years. Patients who don't have known existing cardiovascular disease but have a Q risk score above 10% are offered atorvastatin 20 mg as primary prevention for developing cardiovascular disease. Let's talk about coronary artery disease. Narrowing or stenosis of the coronary arteries due to atherosclerosis may be asymptomatic, or it can present with angina, which can be stable or unstable, or myocardial infarction or a heart attack. There are three options for management of coronary artery disease. Medical management involves secondary prevention with statins, aspirin, beta blockers, and ACE inhibitors. Another option is percutaneous coronary intervention, or PCI, with coronary angioplasty. This involves putting a catheter into the patient's brachial or femoral artery, feeding that up to the coronary arteries under X-ray guidance, and injecting contrast so that the coronary arteries and any areas of stenosis are highlighted on the X-ray images. These areas of stenosis can then be treated with balloon dilatation, followed by the insertion of a stent. And the final option for treating coronary artery disease is using coronary artery bypass grafting, and we're going to talk in much more detail about this. Let's start by talking about cardiopulmonary bypass, which is essential when performing a coronary artery bypass graft. A bypass machine takes blood from the vena cava or the right atrium, pumps it through a machine that adds oxygen and removes carbon dioxide from the blood, then pumps it back into the ascending aorta. This way, blood bypasses the heart and lungs and is artificially oxygenated. Heparin is used to prevent blood clotting. A specialist called a clinical perfusionist is responsible for operating and monitoring the cardiopulmonary bypass equipment. Next, let's talk about cardioplegia. During a coronary artery bypass graft procedure, the heart needs to be still. Causing the heart to stop beating is called cardioplegia. The heart is only stopped after the cardiopulmonary bypass is up and running. A high potassium solution is delivered into the coronary circulation, which causes the heart to stop. Once the surgery is complete, cardioplegia is stopped, and then the heart will spontaneously start beating again. Cardioversion or temporary pacing may be used to treat arrhythmias that occur. Next, let's talk about coronary artery bypass grafts. A separated blood vessel needs to be obtained in order to create a bypass. This blood vessel is called a graft. The three main options for graft vessels are the saphenous vein, which is harvested from the inner leg, the internal thoracic artery, which is also known as the internal mammary artery, and the radial artery. The internal thoracic artery is a branch of the subclavian artery. When the internal thoracic artery is used in a coronary artery bypass graft procedure, the proximal end may be left attached to the subclavian artery. The distal end is separated from any connections and then joined to the left anterior descending artery after the stenotic area. As a result, blood flows from the subclavian artery through the internal thoracic artery and into the left anterior descending artery, leaving it proximally attached to the original site, whilst changing where it supplies, is known as a pedicled graft. The internal thoracic artery can also be used as a free graft if required. A free graft refers to when a section of blood vessel is entirely separated from its original connections before being reattached to the new site for the bypass. During a coronary artery bypass procedure, the graft vessel is attached directly to the ascending aorta, with the other end attached to the coronary artery, distal to the stenosis, therefore bypassing the diseased portion of the artery. Blood flows from the ascending aorta through the graft and into the coronary artery. Vein grafts, for example from the saphenous vein, have a tendency to become stenosed or narrowed over time in a process called intimal hyperplasia. The tunica intima layer of the vein becomes thickened, mostly due to increased pressure. Remember that veins are not used to dealing with high pressure. Arterial grafts, for example, radial or internal thoracic artery grafts, are less affected by intimal hyperplasia or stenosis, and they tend to make better grafts. Let's talk about recovery. After cardiothoracic surgery, patients have careful monitoring and supportive care in the intensive care unit. They're usually discharged after about a week. There is a slow recovery period with a gradual increase in activity. In straightforward cases of coronary artery bypass graft procedures, patients make a full recovery and resume full normal activities after about 3 months. Let's talk about the complications. The two most serious and notable complications of coronary artery bypass procedures are death in about 2-3% of straightforward cases and stroke in about 1-5% of straightforward cases. Other complications include infection, acute kidney injury, cognitive impairment, myocardial infarction, and atrial fibrillation. So thanks for listening to this episode on coronary artery bypass grafts. As always, a big thank you to Harry Watchman for perfectly editing the podcast, and I hope you join us for the next episode where we'll talk about prosthetic heart valves.